We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Fellas, listen up. All you ever ask for is an opportunity. You got it today. Where else would you rather be than right here, right now?
The Rockpile Report with Buffalo Bills season ticket holder Drew Geer.
Be aggressive. You have literally nothing to lose. You're a borderline football team. If I don't keep laughing about this stuff, my teeth are going to turn around and devour my brain.
The Bills make me wanna.
When you have a guy like Josh Allen leading your franchise with a guy that players can trust like Bean and McDermott, honestly, that's where it starts. I think that's why you see a lot of us coming back and taking less money or whatnot, just to be able to go to work every day and know that we're all truly going for the same goal. A lot of organizations will say, you know, it's all about winning. But at nut cutting time, they do some other things. I think that the biggest attraction besides Josh Allen is, you know, you're going to be in an organization that's in it for the right reasons and is doing it right.
Welcome everybody to another edition of the Rockpile Report podcast. I'm your host, Bill, season ticket holder Drew Geer. That's my producer, Chris Krueger. And that was John Mongo Feliciano in his post-signing press conference at BuffaloBills.com, talking about what he felt was special about this iteration of the Buffalo Bills and how it impacted, or at least in his mind, is part of the reason Brandon Bean's able to do that thing that he does so well, sir.
Yeah, well, we all know after hearing that when Feliciano's career is over, he definitely has a career in media waiting for him. With the way he speaks.
Be nice! I mean, he is... Chris, maybe the nickname Mongo... I mean, you've never seen Blazing Saddles. You don't even know the reference I'm about to make.
No, God, well, when you say Mongo, and I know I'm not the only one, people think of Steve Mongo McMichael from WCW.
No. No, yeah. I don't think many of those people exist.
Yeah.
Call in if you actually know who the hell he's talking about.
I'm sure Scott Mason would agree with me.
I bet you more people know who Mongo from Blazing Saddles is than anybody who watched WCW, which is essentially the poor man's WWF. before I was going to launch into tonight's show, we've got a lot on the plate talking about free agency, pre-free agency, Brandon Bean. But once again, we have to open the show with an injury update here at the Rockpile Report. My producer, Chris Krueger, is once again, he's not drinking tonight.
No, I'm not. I'm hyped up on some medication and steroids.
Tell the people why.
My jaw is locked up. I don't know why. I've never experienced this. I don't know if it's infection or TMJ. Never had this happen to me, but I can barely open my mouth. So I've been a frequent visitor to Kentucky Fried Chicken on Abbott Road in South Buffalo for mashed potatoes and gravy. Because I can get a little bit of mashed potatoes on a spork and fit that in my mouth. But for the most part, my jaw, I mean, I've shown you, look, that's as much as, that's as wide as I can open my mouth. It doesn't work. It's been like this for
4 days,
so it sucks.
Oh.
I haven't had solid food. Like I had a piece of chicken with my girlfriend on Wednesday, and then
eat that must have been hysterical.
The chicken?
Yes.
Well, no, it was fine. My mouth worked completely, 100%. But Thursday, Wednesday night, I could feel like my jaw locking. I was like, my jaw is seizing. And I went to the dentist on Thursday, and they had some x-rays. And
folks, I got to tell you, watching him try to talk right now is pretty funny. And it's one of those things. I mean, Chris,
I don't know if they can tell that there's a difference in my tone.
I don't know what I'm going to do over here. I really don't. I really don't know what I'm going to do. I mean, I've got a producer who can't stay healthy. I mean, listen, it's free agency season. I might have to go out and hit the free agent market to try to find a backup producer here. I never thought I would have to I never thought I would be shelling out money for this. I mean, who were the Patriots' backup quarterbacks? Nobody ever knew because they never had to see them. I'm going to have to go out on the free agent market and invest in a backup producer, aren't I?
No, that's not the case, you know. You and I are the Rock Pile Report. Nobody else will fall. You can't replace me and still be the Rock Pile Report. I can't replace you and still be the Rock Pile Report. You know, it's like when Gary Cherone left Van Halen. Like, you can't replace Gary Cherone.
For those of you listening at home, I'll be conducting tryouts. Have your agent call me. Ah, shit, Chris. We're going to have to put you in a bubble. That's what my wife texted me. She goes, can we just rent a bubble and put Chris in it? She's like, she goes, if not for Jess's sake, for the sake of the podcast. So, see, my wife does care about you.
That's great.
Now, we have to start this. Chris, I have to pour out the last of the bourbon before I crack into the wonderful six-pack of IPAs you bought me. I got to pour a little bit of bourbon over this, again, craft ice that you take and make in your free time, which still boggles my mind. I mean, this might be one of the classiest things about you.
Yeah.
Well, it almost makes up for your haircut. I got to pour out some bourbon because we're here tonight to celebrate as the contractual gangster, Brandon Bean, strikes again. We toast to the man, the myth, the legend. I mean, it really is amazing watching him work. And I have to wonder, what exactly is it that happens to people when they step into his office to try to negotiate things? I mean, let me paint a picture for you. I mean, there's probably agents really glad that so much of this is getting done via teleconference and just via phone now, because I can already picture this in my mind. You walk into Brandon Bean's office. The blinds aren't shut, but they're not really open. The room is kind of dim. You walk in and Bean's got his back to you and he tells you to sit down. You do, and instead of joining you, Bean walks around behind you to shut the door while thanking you for coming, and you hear the cylinders as he kind of locks the door. Now he comes back and he sits down, and you realize his seat's probably just about 2 to 3 inches taller than yours. Doesn't matter how tall you are, he's an inch taller somehow. And you realize he's already got a contract proposal drawn up and signed, and he just casually slides it across the desk at you with a pen. Now you obviously start expressing concern because you figured you were there to negotiate, and you've got a list of demands and some asks on behalf of your client. And while you talk, Bean just looks at you, deadpan. He lets you finish, and then he takes out a cigar, maybe lights it, real slowly lights it. Gently taps the paperwork with a nod and a slight wave of the hand. At no point does he speak to you directly. And that's when you start to realize, also inside the binder, is a complete synopsis of your client. His strengths, his weaknesses, his poor personal habits. A list of all the embarrassing things he's done since 8th grade. Everything. The time that you wet the bed when you were 22. Yeah, he's got that. You protest, and proceed to explain your position the entire time. He just stares at you with this look. I mean, if I was Quint from Jaws, he would describe it as lifeless eyes, black eyes like a doll's eyes, until he comes at you with that sign-in bonus and then they roll over white. I imagine it's a pretty harrowing experience that belies his kind of southern drawl and his calm demeanor, what he shows the rest of us in the general public. He breaks you down and eventually gets what he wants. He just wears away at you until you have no choice but to concede to his demands. Or at least I hope that's how it happens. Now, Chris, I have to ask. Is it telling that I prefer the idea of our GM as some kind of, like, almost like a movie villain? like a villainous character, more than the idea of him as just a hardworking, incredibly cerebral GM whose kind of demeanor and just nuanced understanding of NFL contract structures and just the job he does cultivating relationships between players and agents and the team make him capable of really getting some impressive work done.
I think if you were going to give Bean a movie role to play, he would be great in a film that revolves around somebody having a double life. That gangster life and then this, like, southern, southern homebody married with kids, and then on the weekends, you know,
he goes out and fights crime, yeah, like a vigilante. He actually runs a gang.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly how I picture Brandon Bean.
Either way, this offseason was probably some of his finest work. And I want to start at the beginning with the Micah Hyde extension. I mean, it fell by the wayside in a lot of fans' minds over the last week because of everything that's come after. But I'd be remiss if I didn't bring it up, given the impact it has on our current situation. I mean, the underrated duo of Poyer and Hyde will continue playing next to each other for what's probably going to be the rest of their primes. I mean, the two-year extension that Hyde just inked runs through 2023, where he'll be 33 years old, and I think that's pretty much the shelf life of any NFL safety, right?
Yeah, most likely. I mean, I'm going to assume over the next 2 years that that's going to be something they'll target in the draft.
Well, and that's
within the first five rounds, I would assume.
Well, and that's why this is so interesting to me. Not so much in part of the term, or because of the fact that we extended him at all, Hyde's been an underrated part of our pass defense's resurgence ever since he got here. He's a Swiss Army knife for our defense. And under Sean McDermott, he's become one of the steadier parts of our pass pro units. What interested me about this is what it says about the other safeties that have come and gone over the last few years. Considering all the money this team is going to be shelling out over the next few years, and the state of the cap kind of being a relative unknown, we're all kind of banking on this idea that it's going to increase, you'd think that Bean might be hesitant to shell out north of $9 million a year for a safety going forward, even if he does only make him the 13th highest paid safety in the NFL. I mean, he's on his third contract, and he's still not anywhere near the top of safety pay. Yet, every year he's talked about as a potential Pro Bowler or an underrated player, which I think is impressive in and of itself. The fact that we gave it to him, to me, is indicative that they simply don't have enough trust in the guys like Saron Neal and Jaquan Johnson and Dean Marlowe, Trey Elston. I mean, you think about all the names that have come and gone at safety for the Bills over the last 4 years since McDermott got here. None of them have stuck around. Marlowe did, but he literally only is second fiddle to the starting two. No one's come in here and pushed them. Now, the job Hyde does is important for the defense. I mean, he coordinates players from the back end, and he uses his athleticism and multifaceted skill sets to let Frazier kind of mask what he's calling. Our coverage scheme can be kind of masked. It just makes life hard on offensive coordinators because he can drop down into the box and then drop back into deep coverage so fluidly that it gives us a lot of options. So you can fake a pass rush and drop into coverage. You can drop into, you know, quarters coverage. You can drop into a cover three. You can do a lot of different things just by bringing one or both of the safeties down into the tackle box, which is it's confusing and it's hard for quarterbacks to diagnose on the fly. And it works when you have guys like Trey White on the outside who are great cover guys. And when you have linebackers like Matt Milano and you have the coverage talents around these safeties, what they bring to the table is incredibly important to the success of our defense over the last couple of years. So the fact that Bean is still shelling out upper tier money for his aging services indicates that we know it's important, but no one has stepped up and made him expendable. I mean, do you think a guy like Bean, who's a frugal guy, wants to be paying $9 million for a safety?
I have no idea.
Okay, counterpoint. I don't even want to say counterpoint. On the other side of this, here's another example I'll make. John Brown. John Brown was made expendable because Gabe Davis showed in his rookie season that, hey, I've got the chops to play wide receiver at an NFL level.
Well, wide receiver too.
Okay. Wide receiver, period, I'll call it. There is an option in your, because wide receiver two is no longer, I mean, that's such an archaic way of thinking about wide receiver, which I could do a whole podcast about. Because
I wouldn't want him as a one.
You need guys who can do different jobs for you. Targets, volume, that's what dictates who's number one and number two, in which case you could argue Cole Beasley's number two. And John Brown was a number three anyway. But with that said, Gabe Davis's ascension is what made John Brown expendable. At no point have they found someone who can do that for Poyer or Hyde, which is why the two of them are still going to be here until 2023. Or at least that's how their contracts are structured. But in response, Bean, because he's pragmatic, has made sure we don't have to worry about what comes next at the position for at least a few more years, which buys them time to figure it out. I mean, it's not like they haven't taken swings. They've drafted players. They've brought in free agents. They've done it. It just hasn't worked. Hyde was set to be a free agent, and if he hit the market next year with a rising cap, he would absolutely cost more than what it costs to extend him now. I think that's incredible foresight to say, hey, I'm going to have a huge problem if I let this get too far down the road. Let's address it now. Let's just address it now while the player still feels good about things, while I still feel good about things, and I think the cap is going to go up. I mean, I'm obviously happy to have him back. I just hope that the long-term future of the position can start to resolve itself before this next round of deals comes up, because we're going to be replacing both of those guys at the same time now. And that leads us to the trifecta, the group that's really, I mean, that's what we're really here to celebrate, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Excuse me, I have to open a fresh beverage for this one. I'm going to two-fist my way through this, Chris. I'm going to start with the perpetual IPA from Trogs that you were nice enough to buy.
Yeah, I figured yesterday, because I needed to get beer for the show, because I didn't have any Moosehead, I was like, well, I'll just get like a six-pack of IPA, because I generally don't drink beer in the off-season shows, and people do like your beer reviews, so there's
7.5%
that.
7.5% alcohol, 85 IBUs. That's a bitter beer, sir.
Sounds like it's right up your alley.
Smells hoppy as shit. Let's take a whack here. Oh, that's smooth. For a 7.5% alcohol content IPA, that is smooth. And it's hoppy, but it's not too hoppy. It doesn't punch you in the face with it. It really kind of slides nicely. Is Trogs a national? I mean, do they ship around the country?
I'm quite confident they are a brewery that ships nationally.
Okay. This is a great IPA. I was going to say, if this is a small thing, they need to be much bigger than they actually are right now. This is incredible.
Man, part of that, the Wegmans six-pack is what I went with, where you get to, for those of you that have not been in a Wegmans, you have the option of creating your own six-pack, and you can grab different bottles of different beer from different breweries. I will say the one problem that I have with the craft your own six pack at Wegmans, there's a ton. There's might have been two rows specifically for seltzers and like your Jack and Cola, your bottled Jack and Cola, or a Jack lemonade.
Who's paying for that?
Yeah, I don't. It's taking away from the selection of actually the craft your own six pack.
So you're gonna So let me get this straight. You're going to give me the option. I pay the same price.
Yeah.
But I can choose between this. I mean, on the second taste, I'll tell you, the hops really linger on your tongue, but it's kind of nice, especially when you're chasing it with a little bourbon. But no, this is a great beer. But you mean to tell me that Wegmans thinks I'm dumb enough that if you offer me this IPA, and you also offer me a Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Yeah.
And you charge me the same price? How stupid do you think I am?
Yeah, but the fact that they have an insane, like, two rows were devoted to seltzers and like your bottle Jack and Colas or your Smirnoffs or your Mike's Hard.
If you're drinking one of those, you better be. If you're drinking one of those, hear me loud and clear, listeners. If you are drinking a bottled Jack and Cola or a bottled Mike's Hard Lemonade, you better be in a field. Not even floor seats. You better have general admission seats at Darien Lake, or you better be sitting on the inside track at a NASCAR race. Those are the only places I want to see those beverages. It's the only time it's acceptable. That's it. Am I wrong, Chris?
No, I just wish I had more of this selection than having to look at seltzers and all those other drinks.
Get out of here.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Onwards and upwards. Back to football. Bean saved his master class in contract negotiation and structuring for this group that I will simply refer henceforth throughout the podcast to the 21 trifecta. Make no mistake, while the glitz and glamour of free agency's day one might have taken some of the shine off of these deals, they were not just some of Bean's finest work, but in reality might be the brightest beacon of what the Bills are building here both competitively and culturally. It starts with the Milano signing.
A flush with cash.
That is exactly what Milano is right now. And yet it came at little impact to the team in terms of what it could have been. I mean, obviously, Matt Milano means a lot to the Buffalo Bills. I sent these metrics to friend of the show Brett Coleman in January. Oh, hey, by the way, to Buffalo, Doug Flutie on Twitter, who constantly roasts me for using the term friend of the show, bite me.
Oh, I didn't know that he did that.
Oh, of course he did.
He is a friend of the show.
I love that guy. No, I really do. It's hilarious. Like Vince from Lackawanna, who came at me over my usage. He sometimes will send me emails because he used to be a speech writer. And he'll send me emails correcting my grammar. I get that at 6:30 in the morning when I'm hungover after a podcast. It's awesome.
Too bad we didn't know that 2 years ago when we were doing press conferences.
I know.
If Vince would write
you. Could have had a real speechwriter.
Yeah.
But in any event, we sent them to Brett Coleman in January, who tweeted them out so that the world at large would actually see them, considering how big his platform is compared to ours. And it's incredible what a difference Milano made to our defense on the field. Chris, chart. I love it. I love
the
it.
Chart. Oh, no, this thing.
It was the difference, but with the team with and without Matt Milano. Now, I sent this to him in January. When you broke it down into pass yards against, rush yards against, points against, and first downs against, the Bills were glaringly worse without him on the field. I mean, passing yards against, it went up by 58 yards passing per game without Matt Milano. Points against skyrocketed 11.2 points per game where Milano didn't play. First downs jumped up by 5 first downs per game, which, Chris, that's a whole drive. That's one whole drive down the field that potentially could put a team in scoring range. It's clear that he was an integral part of our defensive approach and something that the team wanted to prioritize. But the real questions, as they were with all three of the trifecta, was always going to be, how do you sell it to the player, and how do you make the money work? Now, Sportrack's a fine reference when it comes to financial data, and typically their market estimates are pretty spot on. I mean, except this offseason, which we'll actually touch on in more detail later in the show. This year, almost every one of their carefully calculated comps and prognostications got blown right out of the water by teams flush with cash and desperate. Do you hear me, Patriot fans? Desperate to field a competitive roster. Milano was forecasted to sign a 4 to 5 year deal with an annual average value of about $14 million per, which is what fueled so much of the quote unquote, who could replace Matt Milano discussion. We did it. We had those talks. I talked about, what was his name? Nick, I don't even know. Doesn't matter anymore. Not gonna play here, so it doesn't matter. From the
Nick
Raiders.
Morrow.
From the
Nick
Raiders.
Morrow.
As a potential replacement. We all got in on the act because none of us genuinely believed that Matt Milano would be back. And yet, when it came time to put his name on the dotted line, he ended up agreeing to a deal worth significantly less. A legitimate hometown discount, if you will, at just $11 million on an average annual value. Chris, who's the last truly talented homegrown player to give the Bills a discount on their services in free agency?
I don't know. Joe Ferguson?
Stevie Johnson's the last one I could think of. Back in 2012. Yeah, I mean, he took $7.5 million and $19.5 million guaranteed on a five-year deal, which at the time was pretty well below market rate for a quote-unquote number one wide receiver. But that was a status that ultimately, I mean, it didn't matter because a couple groin injuries later, he was, what, 2 years into the deal he got cut?
Yeah.
So, I mean, hey, good on us for protecting ourselves against that. But he's the last Bill to give us a hometown discount. And I think the problem is that there's been very few players who were worth retaining at that level to come out of our scouting. At least until, what, the last Doug Whaley class and what Bean's kind of thrown out here since then. Now, the player is obviously a talented one. He's incredibly important to what we do on both versus the run and versus the pass. Cover One has that great clip. If you, what is it? What's their new Twitter handle? At Manfree Cover One?
Yeah. That's it.
Fucking Twitter.
Yeah.
Twitter. Yeah. If you guys don't know, their Twitter, the Cover One's Twitter account got blasted into nothingness over a copyright claim from 2017. Literally from 4 years ago.
They'll get you.
And there's no review process. It's just gone. So go follow them at Manfree Cover One. But he has a great breakdown of Matt Milano at the goal line. Remember our goal line stand against Indy? He was integral to all of that. And you really get to watch him. You know, he's known as a coverage linebacker, but you forget how good he is at the line of scrimmage against the run, just in diagnosing plays as they happen. So he was a key cog in our defense. And one of the things that I think about, and I want you to think about this, Chris, and give me a response. Remember when we lost Lorenzo Alexander?
Yes.
The team's response was to go out and try to sign three different players that could give you what one Lorenzo Alexander provided. AJ Klein was kind of the Sam linebacker. Hey, I'm going to play off the ball for you. I'm going to do a little bit around the line of scrimmage, but I'm not going to give you much in the way of pass rush. So Mario Addison had to be brought in to try to augment the pass rush that you lost when you no longer had Lorenzo Alexander. And then they also needed Tyler Matakevich to hold down 70% of your special team snaps. They took three players to try to replace one. With Matt Milano, part of me wonders, after seeing how difficult and expensive that process was, do you think that line of thinking maybe played something of a role in their decision to say, look, we need to find a way to make this Milano deal work? We have to, because we need him for his coverage. We need him for his run-stopping abilities. We need him for – he's a key cog in what we do in pretty much every phase of our defense.
Yeah.
I can see this.
Because I'm doing stuff on the computer over here, and I'm not really paying attention.
He's doing producer stuff.
I'm doing producer stuff, but Milano resigning for what he did – under market value per spot track. I thought it was gone because of that. The famous quote, he's earned the right to go to free agency. I can't believe he's back. I'm glad he's back.
In truth, too, the deal is really just a 2-year deal. When you look at the lack of dead cap hit after 2023, if the team still wants him around at that point, they can choose to restructure him for more guaranteed money. Or they can just replace him with minimal penalty. I mean, the construction of this contract, it's a chef's kiss type of thing. That his cap hit this year is somehow still less than $7 million. Which ultimately I think the whole deal hinged on. In not only allowing us to retain him, but also giving us the flexibility to go after other names on this list. The fact that Bean pulled this off at all. Right there, I'll drink to that. Cheers, you drunkless son of a bitch.
Bottled water.
Next on the list is Darrell Williams. Now, with Matt Milano in the fold, fans kind of assumed, I think, that it was a foregone conclusion that Darrell Williams had to be leaving. And that, because I see the tweets, I see the articles that people pump out. Chris, these are the weeks that I'm genuinely glad we only do this once a week. Like, we aren't the guys trying to be the up to the minute. Well, I've got to tweet about this, or I have to inform our fan base about. No. We're going to drink and we're going to talk about it, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to soak it all in. Pragmatic long form conversation. In that moment, I saw everybody collectively freak out, going, okay, right, who are the right tackle options? What are our trades? What does the draft look like? And I get it, because with Tyler Moton and Cam Robinson both franchise tagged, Williams was easily the biggest name on the offensive tackle market. I mean, again, Spotrac had him pegged for a figure that both me and Paul Wineski of Hashtag Sports openly laughed at. At just $7.4 million per season. Because there was no way teams wouldn't bid up the price tag of the only surefire starting right tackle left in free agency into at least the low teens. Maybe the $10 to $11 million range if some trades happened and things of that nature. But on top of being a gangster, Bean is a fucking showman. And just a day after hitting Bills fans with his masterpiece of a Milano signing, he goes, hey guys, you thought that was cool? Check this out. And surprises us again by inking the first competent right tackle the Bills have had in almost 20 years to a contract extension. That's not hyperbole, Chris. I looked at it. Here's a rundown of 20 years of right tackles for the Buffalo Bills. Cody Ford and Ty Inseki were a revolving door back in 2019. You remember that?
Yes, I do.
From 2018 to 2016, Jordan Mills was our right tackle, who I think was most well-known for just repeatedly being pantsed by Cam Newton. Yeah. Cam Wake.
Yeah.
Cam Wake of the Miami Dolphins, who you see twice a year. I think he beat Jordan Mills. I want to say the one season he put up six sacks or four. He had like 10 sacks and like three or four of them came off of Mills, which is pathetic. Something about Cam Wake. He was Mills' kryptonite. I mean, so was pretty much anything at the NFL level. From 15 to 14, it was Chantrell Henderson, who, that poor bastard, he got Crohn's so badly that his doctor said you need marijuana. You need THC therapy in order to fix your Crohn's disease. And the league, because it's the no fun league, decided that's a bridge too far. We don't care about a doctor's note. And so he quit football, which I think is incredibly brave. I give him a lot of credit for that. He was okay, but he wasn't anything to write home about. From 2014 to 2011, Eric Pears. Do you remember that name, Chris?
Oh, vaguely.
A low-level starter, mostly neutral over the first 3 years of his deal. And then he spent his final year kicked inside to play guard. Because I think they finally had seen enough. They said, look, we need to see if you can do something else to help this team. You need to at least earn some of your paycheck this year. Before that, I'm going to lightning round you 2010 to 2002. Something called Mansfield Rado was here for a year. Langston Walker.
I remember him.
He who shall not be named on this podcast, because that whole free agency period just blows my mind still to this day. Terrence Pennington, who I can't even recall. Do you know anything about him?
No.
Anything.
I don't.
When I say the name Terrence Pennington, tweet at us at Rockpile Report. What's the first thing? And not Chad. That's the thing. The first thing when I hear Terrence Pennington, I go, Chad Pennington. That's it. I don't think of anything that ever happened in a Bills uniform.
Do you have Ed Wang on the list?
No, because Ed Wang never made the team.
Ah, damn it.
Jason Peters played right tackle on his way to becoming our left tackle. And the illustrious Mike Williams. Yeah. I'll be blunt. The Bills' right tackle group has been a shit show for something close to two decades. And in a singular season, Darrell Williams came, grabbed the job by the horns, and helped anchor our pass protection in a way that nobody has. In a season where it was probably of paramount importance for our team to get where we eventually landed in the AFC title game. Similar to Milano, Williams gave us something we haven't had, and we couldn't let him walk. And he gave us a I don't want to say a hometown discount, but you could tell there was a level of appreciation for Bean rescuing him from the trash heap and kind of bringing him back to relevance. Because he's a savage when it comes to negotiating these deals, the money was backloaded on Williams' deal, making it palatable to retain his services. And his cap hits are going to be 6.1, 8.9, and 8.9 with a $1.8 million cap buyout, dead money buyout, in 2023. So again, a three-year deal that's really a two-year deal. That's incredibly advantageous, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
The thing I like about it is that it's not just a contract below market value, and not just below what we as fans thought was going to come out of this, but once again, it's left us with space to maneuver. Then you get to, as we heard in the intro, the John Feliciano extension. Now, this extension, in my mind, is like the guy you were friends with as a kid who wowed the whole neighborhood by pulling up in a sweet muscle car. And everyone's already like, oh, man, you made it. You killed it. You're driving around in this thing. You're going to pick up all kinds of chicks. And then he, just for fun, he goes, hey, you want to see something cool? And just smokes the tires. Why? Because he can. That's what I equate this to. I mean, John Feliciano, I've seen the hot takery on social media. People talking about how they're mad that we paid what we paid for him, which honestly isn't much. It's a three-year deal for $17 million. Total value with an average annual salary of 5.6. And if the structures of, I mean, they're not public yet, but if the structures of this deal are anything like Milano's and anything like
Darryl Williams,
I'm sure it's going to be team friendly. I mean, you heard the guy speaking in the intro. He understands what this is. He loves this team. He loves this culture. He has an affinity for our front office. So I'm positive if they came to him with an ask, right? He'd acquiesce.
Yeah. Well, he said he didn't want to leave here.
No. He was.
Which is weird.
At the start of free agency, he was talking about how he very much expected him and the Bills to find a way to make it work. I bet you when the final contract details come out about this, you're going to find out that he kind of did us a favor in terms of what our cap situation is. So with that, you think about what John Feliciano is. I understand the people who didn't like the move because they looked out and said, well, wait a minute. There's, what's his name from the Raiders? Gabe Jackson. And there's a Kevin Zeitler out there. We need to upgrade. We need a top-tier option. Well, just to run this past you, in terms of watching Kevin Zeitler go sign with the Ravens yesterday, here's what I've got. He got a three-year deal, same thing, same term as Feliciano. It's looks like, what is this, guaranteed at signing is $16 million compared to, we don't even know what the guaranteed money is in Feliciano's deal, but it's $16 million, average salary of $7.5 million, which is high, again, higher money. I mean, the total contract was $22.5 million over 3 years, with a $9 million signing bonus. And when you look at the cap structures, it's not, what is it? His cap hits 4 this year, but it jumps up to almost 9 next year. I'd be interested to see how Feliciano did it by comparison, but that's a lot of money.
Well, it's free agency, you know. Of course, teams are going to throw around money like that. I mean, who's the Joe Tooney? Right?
Let's look at that, just out of curiosity. Let me get on here, jump onto the old Google machine.
Yeah, Joe Tooney signed, what was it, with the Chiefs, 5 years, was it $80 million? I don't even know how much of that is guaranteed money.
Guaranteed at signing, $31 million guaranteed at signing with an average annual value of $16 million, a $17 million signing bonus that's literally the size of Mongo's whole contract. The signing bonus is literally the same size as Mongo's whole deal. And this year, okay, he did the team a solid, right? Said, hey, guys, I'll be team friendly for a year. Sure, here's my $4.5 million cap hit. Next year, it jumps up to 17.8. His cap hit next year is going to be more than Mongo's whole contract. Who's still angry about it out there? Who among you listening to this podcast is still mad hearing that and thinking to themselves, all right, maybe Mongo's not so bad.
No, plus Mongo's the kind of guy you want on the field if somebody takes a shot at Josh.
I'll tell you what. Mongo, and some of that can be overblown, but here's what I'll say. Mongo is a guy who gives this team, between him and Ford, you have an established baseline of talent now. Okay? It doesn't make you world beaters or set at the guard position by any stretch of the imagination. But what it does is it makes you comfortable going into a football season where you're supposed to contend for something. You can go into the draft. You know, there's people among the Bills fan base who are in love with this Creed Humphreys in the draft.
Yep.
Okay? There's going to be good offensive, interior offensive linemen available in this year's draft. This is the type of deal you see teams make when they say, hey, we know we have to be competitive come week one. We don't want to have to hedge our bets on a rookie, but we're going to bring one in who we hopefully can groom with a higher ceiling than either one of the guys we have in front of him in hopes that he takes one of those two jobs. And this Feliciano contract seems to speak to that, right?
Yeah.
Fuck. I love it. I love it. I love all of this. And Chris, and folks, for those of you, I love that I walked in here after telling Chris to go get audio from the John Feliciano thing. And Chris, because he's a producer, and because, I mean, that's what makes a good producer, right? They're picky about things.
Yeah, you sent me, let me go to the text messages, because a lot of this, I was like, ooh, that's a good quote of what Feliciano said, because it says, the reason guys are coming back and taking less money is because of Josh Allen, Brandon Bean, and Sean McDermott. That's a really good quote on paper until you hear the guy say it, and he's boring.
Chris goes, thanks for sending me that. Thanks. Yeah, and like he said it so shittily that I was like, what? What's the problem? And then I heard him speak. I'll tell you what. There's a reason he's called Mongo. Okay? Mongo is pawn in Game of Life. That's all I'm going to say. And you don't even know the reference because you won't watch Blazing Saddles.
Oh. I watch Spaceballs.
See? And you won't watch Blazing Saddles?
I just haven't watched it.
I'm going to force you to. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get you hammered so you can't leave, and I'm going to make you watch all these crappy movies.
You know what I watched 2 weeks ago? Me and the girlfriend and her son, we watched Paul Blart, Mall Cop.
Hey, you. Just looking at your face when you say it, I just want to throw something, hey? The two don't even compare. Chris, these three deals were fans everywhere were hand-wringing, talking about how they didn't understand. How are we going to get this done? What's going to happen? We don't know. Here's what I'll tell you. The Buffalo Bills did a ton of work here. They managed to bring back three players at hometown discounts for what I think is that's lunacy first and foremost, because we're just so unfamiliar with it. And they were able to do it in a year where you had to have continuity. You couldn't risk not having it. I wouldn't have blamed Bean if he had come back and said, look, we had to overpay Matt Milano because he's just so important to what we do. Or, hey, we had to pay too much for Darrell Williams because there was no other right tackle options on the market. But we did what we had to do because we want to protect Josh Allen and keep him comfortable standing in the pocket so he can continue our offensive evolution. And instead, we come away with this group of players re-signed that really all come at palatable rates. I've never seen this before.
I think that part of it might be they took hometown discounts because they actually, this is just so weird to say, that they actually believe they're really close to the Super Bowl.
Well, and that's the part of this underrated narrative here. There's underrated narratives at play here that I want to talk about. First of all, it's evidence that the team is willing to practice what they preach. You show up here, you work hard, you trust the process, you buy in and you give me everything you have and we'll reward you, right?
Yeah.
Trey White got paid.
Yep. Dawkins.
Dawkins got paid. Allen's going to get paid. Matt Milano got paid. Darrell Williams comes in off the street and gets paid. Feliciano comes in, free agent. The Raiders didn't care enough to even try to retain his services. Now he's on a second contract here. It's if you show up and you become a leader here. Now, I know some people might point at the John Brown thing and go, oh, you know, he's out there. If you show up here and you grow into the type of leader we want you to be, you'll be here. which then sends a message on down through the locker room, throughout the franchise, that look, if you show up here and you do things the right way, if you're a rookie, you're looking up at these guys going, man, this team really took care of these guys. And they, in turn, took care of the team. That's the kind of family you want to be a part of, right?
Yeah.
It also shows that our contender status, to your point, is paying dividends. You don't think if Matt Milano thought we were the Jacksonville Jaguars, he'd be out of here. If we were in the middle of another rebuild or another, let's say there was turnover at the coaching position, or if we had a Chicago type situation where your head coach and your GM could both be on the ropes, do you think Matt Milano hitches his wagon to this franchise for another couple of years?
No.
Absolutely not. The fact that we're a contender is paying dividends for the this is the first time we've been here. It's nice being on this side of things, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to be like the Patriots and overpay for everything. Like, we legitimately haven't signed anyone yet.
It's still weird, right? It's still weird hearing that.
Yeah,
the Patriots overpaying people. Meanwhile, the Buffalo Bills are getting players to take hometown discounts. In this economy? What?
Exactly. We still haven't, as far as I know, we haven't signed anybody in free agency.
Here's the best part, and the thing that I think might be the most underrated current in all of this is organizational trust. It's something I keep saying, but the term itself isn't one that I've heard used a lot, so I'm going to keep throwing it out there until it catches on. I feel like that – I hate that I even know this reference, but it's like that girl in the movie Mean Girls who keeps trying to make the word fetch a thing until she gets yelled at by that snarky blonde. When you think about what we accomplished here and the way those deals are structured, all the money is on the back end of those contracts. That doesn't happen unless those players trust our front office and they trust this coaching staff that, hey, you're going to put me in a good position to continue being productive. You as the front office are going to put, you are going to trust me long enough that I actually get to see my money. I mean, we know NFL contracts compared to the other major sports in America, some of them aren't worth the paper they're written on. I mean, look at Kyle Van Noy. 1 year into a four-year contract where you expect him to go into the Dolphins and be a core player in their rebuild, and all of a sudden he's, to his own surprise and his agents, he gets cut and thrown back out on the street. That's a tough pill to swallow. I'm interested to see what that does to their ability to lure other players in who they talk about. Well, we want you to be a part of our culture. And they'll say, well, I thought that guy was supposed to be part of your culture. What happened to him? It shows that these players trust our organization as a whole with their futures. Make no mistake, not only did the Bills get their most important work of this free agency period done before it even started, but they did so in a way that sends a message to the rest of the locker room and to the rest of the NFL simultaneously. I mean, to players on the roster, it shows them that, again, if you show up here and you do the right things, we will take care of you. We'll make it work because we want to cultivate relationships with the players who are going to help us compete at a high level. To free agents, it says, look at guys like Darrell Williams. They come here off the street in need of rehabbing their images. They come here and they fall in love with what we're building to the point where they're willing to help us continue building. They get here for one season and they want to be a part of it. They want to be a part of this going forward for another year, maybe another 2 years, maybe another 3 years. So, hey, if you're a veteran out there on the market where musical chairs is being played and the chairs are getting pulled out, the music's going to stop soon. You might as well come to a place where not only can you be productive, not only are we a contender, but we have a culture. We have a culture where once you get here, you might not want to leave.
All right, I got something for you.
Oh, boy. Hit me with it.
Wait, let me do this. Bill signed former Dolphins punter Matt Hack.
Oh, boo! The fuck?
Ow. Per Tom Pelissero of NFL Network, that just came down the pipeline 28 minutes ago.
Way to kill my buzz. Jesus.
So, and this is from, again, friend of the show. And really actual friend, because we've seen him, unlike you friggin' people, Bruce Nolan. Corey Bohorquez, first in the league with a 50.8 yard average. Matt Hack was 24th, 44.7. Boyo was 5th in net yardage per punt. Hack was 20th. Hack 14th in percentage punts returned. Bojo 21st. Hack 7th in average hang time. Boyo 6th.
Chris, you really just derailed my whole train here. I felt good about this.
So I don't even know if what that means for...
I'll tell you what it means. It means I'm cracking another fucking beer.
Bohorquez.
Jesus Christ. Matt Hack. Oh, God.
Do you think we'll get rid of Bohorquez then?
He's already out there. He's on the market.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's a free agent.
I thought he was like an RFA or something.
No, he's out there. So that means whatever they wanted, we just signed Matt Hack. This is wow. You just derailed the whole flow of the show. Way to go, Chris.
Oh, hey.
Hey, guys.
Do you want breaking news as this show is being recorded?
Free agent tryouts for producers are happening this week. Free agent tryouts for backup producers, just in case, are being held this week. Email us, rockpilereport716@gmail.com with your resume. But looking ahead, okay, so the start to free agency was yesterday, and despite a falling salary cap, there were still some early fireworks and some teams that were really working to try to change the profile of their teams, and Buffalo wasn't one of them.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
That's what you'd think anyway, looking at social media. The outrage that I've seen from some of the more WGR caller-esque corner of our fan base. I mean, you'd think they've forgotten that Bean just ensured that our biggest holes were already filled with, at a minimum, starter-level talent, if not above-average talent, before the free agency period even started. Chris, do you understand that dynamic? Like, the idea that people celebrated all of the great things Bean just did that we spent almost 40 minutes talking about, and yet start crying the second they see what the Joneses next door are buying.
Yeah.
What's your opinion on that?
God, I don't think I really have an opinion on that at all. Really.
Nice. Great. That's really productive for a football podcast. You don't have an opinion. Here's what I'll say. I think a lot of it's just, again, keeping up with the Joneses. People were excited about the things that we got and then saw what their neighbor got and said, well, wait a minute. How come I can't have nice things? I want a brand new grill. It's like me looking over my fence as I go, well, wait a minute. Why does my neighbor have a brand new Blackstone flat top grill? I want one of those. I'm just out here with my little camping flat top grill. And I have a Weber. It's nice, but it's not a flat top. I'm mad. Now I'm thinking I need one. When in reality, I've got a Weber grill. I don't know why these are the things that go on in my head. And I don't know why they're things that go through the head of our fans watching teams like the Jets and the Patriots. But I will say, watching free agency, some interesting trends popped up that I think are worth discussing. Just in the first 2 days of free agency. First of all, Chris, this might interest you, considering you used to live in that world. 2021 free agency is more Tinder than eHarmony.
I've been on eHarmony. They said, nope, got nothing for you.
People took one look at the hair. They took a look at your emotional profile, and they were like, oh, God.
Well, you fill.
I'm surprised they didn't just refund you your money and kick you off the website.
Well, you fill it out, and then it's like, all right, we're finding you your matches. And they were like, we're looking all over the United States, and we can't find you anything.
Did they give you a refund?
No, I think I did like a free weekend, and it was nothing. Then I get on Hinge and find out that my current girlfriend lives like 3 miles from here. So, I mean, eHarmony's wrong.
Yeah, you also spent a lot of unsuccessful years on Tinder, as I remember. I remember having...
I've beaten Tinder.
I beat Tinder? You finished the game?
Yeah. I'm waiting for Tinder 2.0 to come out.
I hate you so much.
I've beaten Tinder, I've beaten Bumble, and I've mastered Hinge.
God, I hate you. There was a lot of deals that got broken in the first 12 hours of NFL free agency. And for better or in some cases worse, they seem more like teams and players are out there looking for short flings instead of long-term engagements. As of midnight last night when I was putting our podcast notes together, there were 64 players linked to contracts. Of those, just 8 of them had more than a 3-year term. Now, that's not the booze talking. Less than 15% of the field of free agents that signed in the early goings landed a deal that'll keep them with their team beyond 2024. And even some of those deals are built so that teams or players can opt out of them at certain points. Meanwhile, there's 22 players that have just 1-year contracts, which makes up 30%. Some of those aren't your standard journeyman, right? Because you're used to seeing the guy, a Ty Insecki quality player who would sign a 1-year contract, a Darrell Williams, right?
Yeah.
Kind of a, hey, often injured, nobody thinks highly of him. You got to pick him up off the scrap heap and hopefully you can rehab his image. Jameis Winston, 1-year deal. Linebacker Christian Kirksey. He was one of that crowd of break glass in case of Milano emergency options that Bills fans, especially Greg Thompson over at Cover One, those people were in love with the idea of signing him if Milano really did leave. Defensive end Vincent Taylor, a player who, for some reason, there's a segment of Bills Mafia who is obsessed with him that I can't say that I understand. But all of these guys signed 1-year deals. It's clear that the market uncertainty for both players and teams really has kind of manifested itself into this environment where nobody wants to sign long-term. Teams don't know what the cap is going to look like, so they don't want to marry themselves to players for too long. At the same time, players, they don't know what the market's going to look like. So they are kind of hedging their bets and saying, look, if I can hit free agency again soon, maybe when there's a little more money, it might help pad my bank account and get me, you know, put my kids through college. So with that in mind, I just think it's crazy. There used to be a day, Chris, where every player wanted a five-year deal.
Yeah.
4 to 5 years was like that was the gold standard of what premier free agents wanted. Now you're watching guys completely eschew that. It's gone completely the other way. It's wild. Another thing I noticed is that defensive end pay, recession proof. What falling cap? Falling cap, what are we talking about? I'm sure that's what a lot of GMs out there shopping for pass rushers must have been thinking, because when you see the price tags associated with some of the guys who signed, that's the only explanation for the lunacy that I saw. It's the only explanation. I mean, Matt Judon, the highest paid defensive player in Patriots history. Think about the great defensive players they've had. Richard Seymour, Mike Vrabel. Matt Judon is your Stephon Gilmore. Matt Judon has now trumped him as the highest paid defensive player in franchise history. Carl Lawson got more guaranteed money and a bigger average annual value on his contract than Yannick Ngakoue. Do you remember the Yannick Ngakoue like party Buffalo was getting ready to throw?
Yeah, because we were going to trade for him.
Everyone wanted us to trade. Hey, listen, he's franchise tagged. We need to be one of the teams that gets in on him. Oh, he went to the Vikings. Oh, he's available again. Let's go get him. Everyone here in Buffalo has loved this guy. He just got... He's now paid less than Carl Lawson. Trey fucking Hendrickson. Remember the guy whose production I charted and illustrated that not only was it statistically an outlier in terms of what we consider to be both elite and likely to be replicated defensive end play, being that it came playing second fiddle on a defensive line stocked with talent, there's no way he could replicate that on his own. According to Tom Pelissero, his 4-year, $60 million contract comes with $32 million guaranteed in his first 2 years. $32 million of his money is going to get shelled out in the first 2 years. Just to put that into perspective for you, the 21 salary cap is $182.5. Since he just agreed to allocate 10% of its entire cap space to this one pass rusher who is more a shot in the dark than he is a proven commodity. He has one season with double-digit sacks. He has one season where his sack-to-pressure ratio was above 20%.
I would need $32 million in the first 2 years to live half of the year in southern Ohio.
Yeah, no, Cincinnati's garbage. The fact that they are the birthplace, I mean, I think we talked about this before, but the fact that they're the birthplace of Skyline Chili, I really hope that a sinkhole just swallows that city up. And anybody who thinks Skyline is actual chili, stay there. Stay there when it happens. We don't need you.
I've had Skyline Chili.
What'd you think of it? Answer this carefully, because listen, producer tryouts are coming.
No, they're not. Like anywhere in the country that has like a thing that you should try, like that's the only reason I did it. I was in Kentucky for work doing some training classes. I asked the class instructor, hey, where do I go for chili?
Would you eat it again?
Probably not.
All right. That's a good man. Here. You know what? Cheers to that.
Yeah. He was like, just go to Skyline. I was like, all right. I asked a local. That's what they said. Go to Skyline. You know, like, people come here and are like, hey, should I go to Duff's or Anchor Bar? And you go, no. Go to Barbell. You give them, like, the actual, like...
I knew, like,
Skyline is, like, Anchor Bar in Cincinnati for the chili. But I just decided to ask a local... And they just said, just go to Skyline.
Like, I use that as a profiling mechanism when I meet people from Ohio. I go, so what do you think about that Skyline chili? And I say it in a really excited tone of voice. And if they say, oh, yeah, it's great, I don't talk to you anymore. You're fucking done. You're cut. It almost happened to my brother's girlfriend. And then she's like, well, I ate it once a long time ago and I thought it was good. And I was like, what about now? She goes, well, I'm a vegetarian. And I was like, all right, you get a pass. Because I know you won't go back. But so... think about this. Since he just allocated 10% of its entire cap space to one pass rusher, putting that into perspective, the Rams and Cowboys' entire quarterback rooms. Think about it. The Rams have Matt Stafford. The Cowboys just signed Dak Prescott to the richest quarterback contract in terms of new money average ever. Each one of those teams have about 11% of their team's cap allocated to quarterback. Indy and Pittsburgh are paying 14%. That's an insane amount of cap space allocated to one dude. One guy who might not even pan out now that you've taken him away from Cam Jordan, taken him away from the interior defensive line of the Saints and the coaching of the Saints, and you've put him in Cincinnati. I just...
Dude this, wants to get paid.
This is going to be a contract that I'm pretty sure can also go in the sinkhole that should swallow up that city. In all, five defensive ends finished this free just the first day of free agency with an average annual value of higher than $12 million a year. I mean, it's telling that J.J. Watt's deal signed 2 weeks ago has him ranked fourth in average annual value of all defensive ends signed through the UFA period. So with all that sticker shock, it's easy to see why Buffalo wasn't and likely couldn't be a player in that market. I'm sure they made calls on guys like Lawson. I'm sure they kicked the tires the same way they did on J.J. Watt. And when they found out, hey, I want $16 million. Fuck you. You can't do that. You can't. Ugh. Whew. I thought, given the cap crunch, teams might be a little gun-shy to splurge on pass rushers, and I was wrong. But you know where that's getting made up, Chris? Is on the wide receiver front. Amid all the fireworks and chaos, the skill position market has been pretty quiet, specifically that of the wide receiver group. On Monday, there's three notable acquisitions: Corey Davis, Kendrick Bourne, Nelson Agholor. And outside of that, it was radio silence in terms of meaningful players. Today, Diana Rossini from ESPN tweets out, just spoke to a free agent wide receiver to find out what's going on with all the wide receivers still unsigned. He said, quote unquote, the wide receiver market is really bad right now. Chris, oh, and then Cameron Wolf kind of doubled down on that by quote tweeting it and saying, surely a reason why top end wide receiver market hasn't moved much. Players slash agents waiting for more money to arrive. It ain't coming. Plenty of players going to sign for lower values than they initially thought. Now, when you start to digest this and you realize no one's going out to free agency to sign wide receivers, it's incredible that that's happening in a pass-first league, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But then don't quarterbacks make the wide receiver?
Well, that's, and I guess that's what it comes down to. Wide receivers have been devalued in this free agency period to a degree.
It's like they're the new running back.
Kind of. And it's going to be interesting to see how this logjam at the position group clears up. Because, I mean, in hindsight, it makes the Bills look really smart for not keeping John Brown at $9 million. When you're looking at all the guys out there on the market who still don't have contracts. And it also makes you raise an eyebrow or two. Maybe both. Whatever the hell New England did yesterday, spending what would seem like a boatload on two wide receivers in Kendrick Bourne and Nelson Agholor, who, while not terrible wide receivers, they were on nobody's, like, they weren't in anybody's top three in terms of their free agency wish list. There are at least eight other wide receivers out there that would have come first before Agholor or Bourne, which means either Belichick was desperate or he has a very specific plan that revolves around a bum-ass quarterback who can't throw the football. I feel like I've been crasser than usual during this show. I kind of like it.
Yeah, you have.
I'm sure our listeners won't. Given how much work Brandon Bean was busy doing over the weekend, are you shocked that the Bills sat on their hands early on in this free agency?
What do you mean they sat on them? They just signed Matt Hack.
Keep saying it. It's going to make me angry. We're going to derail this whole podcast. I'm trying to forget, Chris. I'm drinking to forget.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the only thing we've done is signed one person, a punter, a half hour ago.
Yikes.
I mean, I'm glad that we haven't thrown out that kind of money for a defensive end or anybody on the D-line.
Wow. Chris, you want to talk about breaking news? I've got some breaking news for our listeners. An impromptu beer review. This Ellicottville Brewing Company Foggy India Pale Ale.
Hold on. Didn't I tell you you probably wouldn't like it?
Oh, my God.
Was that not right?
It tastes like somebody... It's billed as a smooth and hazy with dreamy tropical hop flavor IPA running 6.3% volume.
That's why I told you I didn't think you would like it. It's because of that description on the bottle.
It tastes like you took a Citra hopped IPA and then put a cigarette out in it. Like, I don't know what the hell this is supposed to be, Ellicottville.
Yeah, usually Ellicottville has some pretty good beers. Well, choke it down. You opened it.
This is god awful. You people should be. Someone should be shot in the foot for this.
Are you upset that it's labeled as an IPA?
Yes. I'm upset that it's labeled as an IPA instead of, like, you could have literally called it anything. You could have just not labeled it, not sold it, and just dumped it out the back of the factory where it belongs. You could have poured it into the woods out behind Ellicottville Brewing Company, and no one would have been mad at you because they would have tasted it and gone, oh, yeah, no, I see this. I see what you did there. So are you on the bandwagon of thinking that the Bills didn't do enough?
I'm fine with they did. I like that we're at a point where we got to re-sign our own, and that's what we're focusing on, is re-signing our own players.
Absolutely. And I think that we killed it. I mean, I'll say this. Given how much work Brandon Bean was busy doing over the weekend, I love the moves. I love the fact that they got it done. There was a deadline, and they got moves done that were team advantageous. And I like what some of these other teams did out there. I mean, just full disclosure, so you don't think I'm being a homer, the Chargers, they went into free agency with a focus to improve the protection. Hey, who does that sound like? Hey, we need to go improve the protection for our maybe franchise sophomore quarterback.
Yep.
Yeah. So they go out there. I mean, last week I went through all the ways Bean has tried to slap Band-Aids in our offensive line situation. It's funny to note that Tom Telesco, the GM of the Chargers, has been trying to get the offensive line right in San Diego and now L.A., literally correct ever since he got there. And he's tried trade, free agency, the draft. And yet, whereas here in 2021, it's clear that with Ford and Feliciano in place, Bean wants to take another crack at using the draft to backfill our offensive line. Telesco has just kind of given up, and he's going to just start writing sizable checks until he gets the protection he wants. I give him credit for not quitting on that approach. Just, hey, listen, keep trying to fix the offensive line, because if you don't, you know who did? Was Ryan Grigson. Ryan Grigson quit trying to fix the offensive line and just kept throwing Andrew Luck out there and ruined probably one of the best generational quarterbacks of our era, like you and me.
Yeah.
Right? Right now, he would be what, in our adult lives, like I think about this, like Peyton Manning, what, 99?
Yeah, I think he was drafted in 98.
98, 99. Tom Brady comes around in 2000
draft.
Okay, so 2000 draft, he starts in 2003 after they trade Drew Bledsoe to the Bills.
Yeah.
The Aaron Rodgers in 2005. The Ben Roethlisberger, Eli Manning, Philip Rivers in 2004. This cluster of franchise quarterbacks. Andrew Luck was the closest thing to that that we got to see in our lifetime, right? As adults, as drinking adults.
Yeah.
Okay. And Ryan Grigson ruined that for everyone. He ruined it for the NFL by failing to get that guy adequate protection. He quit trying and just let him get beat up behind bad offensive lines, thinking skilled players could bail him out. Ruined his career. Forced him into early retirement. It's good to see that at least Telesco is willing to keep swinging until he gets it right. Herbert's fun to watch. On the other side of the ball, you got teams that confuse the hell out of me, like Tennessee. They focus their free agency efforts into landing expensive pass rushers in Bud Dupree and Danico Autry, and then we watch their number two, number three most targeted players, and their number five most targeted player all leave the football team. I mean, greener pastures, greener bank accounts, still the same. Corey Davis, Jonnu Smith, and whatever his name is there, the Khalif Raymond. Jonnu Smith specifically was the apple of a lot of Bills fans' eye, right? He signs with the Patriots for one of the richest contracts they've ever handed out to a skill position player. You let the things that paced your offense leave so you could sign two more guys who know how to blitz? Chris, this is what those are the types of moves that people were afraid of when we hired Sean McDermott. They said, if you bring in a defensive head coach, and they saw the way that he kind of said, hey, I need defensive players. I want that. You remember that, right?
Yeah.
The fear was real that McDermott would not understand offensive football enough and would cater too much to the defensive side to the point that it became a detriment to the team. I mean, those defensive end moves that they made, that dynamic is playing out in Tennessee because those moves that they made are the types of things you'd expect to see from a team going for a title. And instead, you're now looking at a team that lacks any offensive weapons to really make that a reality. And then today, they announced that they released a backup offensive tackle in Adoree Jackson, who wasn't he like a Pro Bowler a few years ago?
I have no idea. I think he's... Isn't he more known for his return skills than he is for playing corner?
Maybe. I don't know. But it just shocks me that a team that's like, hey, we want to get better on defense, but let's lose a corner. Let's lose one of our corners, guys. Let's do that. And then let's also lose all of our pass catchers. Doesn't matter. We got the Derrick Henry train. Except that didn't work against the Ravens last year. So don't worry, Chris. It'll work again. It'll work again. And then you look around the AFC East. It seems like it's going to look different in 2021. The Patriots are blowing their wad in uncharacteristic fashion. The Dolphins are being uncharacteristically quiet. The Jets are slow playing things before kind of landing a few quality targets at slightly inflated prices. And then they came away, I got to say it, Chris, they came away with my favorite defensive end option on the market this year in defensive end Carl Lawson.
No, wait, let me say something.
What? I didn't understand a one word you said.
Ron, are you okay?
Ron. Ron, where are you?
Oh, I'm in a glass case of emotion.
I'm not proud, but I'll admit that last night, I, out of frustration, when I saw the Jets sign Carl Lawson, I ate half a box of Nilla wafers at 11 o'clock at night.
Nilla wafers.
Nilla wafers.
You that boring. Nilla wafers. That's like a cement cookie.
I don't like candy. I don't like sweet things. Nilla wafers. I love banana pudding. Specifically
boring.
Because it's full of Nilla wafers. I ate legitimately half a box of them last night out of just anger at the fact that the Jets signed Carl Lawson. I thought the signing could make sense. I liked the player's upside. And then I watched him ink a deal worth $45 million over 3 years with 30 fully guaranteed. Spotrac had him at 8, right? Weren't we just talking about that?
Yeah.
That this year they're usually they're close, and this year their numbers got blown out of the water. I mean, that's not a trend I want to be on that side of. Now, where this is going to be interesting looking on the AFC East is that Wednesday night we're going to drop our AFC East Roundup podcast, which was recorded. As you're listening to this, it's already in the bag. We went around the division picking the brains of some of the best podcasters around the AFC East, looking at each team's approach to the first 2 days of the 2021 free agency period. You're definitely going to want to check that out. We take everybody to task, and the concept is best case scenario, worst case scenario, and what's likely as the rest of free agency pans out. We're definitely going to be talking to Scott Mason to play like a Jet about that Lawson contract, just to get his feel for it. I mean, the player's nice, but that cost, $15 million per, for a player who, unlike J.J. Watt and the $16 million he signed for, he doesn't have a defensive player of the year on his wall. He doesn't have anything. He hasn't eclipsed 10 sacks and you just gave him $15 million per? Good fucking luck. And ultimately, I'm doing it. We live in a knee-jerk world, and it's hard to judge what other teams have done, but it's also hard to judge what we, the Bills, have and haven't accomplished at this point. Because when you look at the nature of the remaining positions where we need help, the markets are soft, and they're going to have to define themselves before Bean is really going to start negotiating, given how little cap space we have left. No one should be shocked that he didn't go big game hunting on day one. But in the coming days, there's going to be a market of veteran players looking for a home, just itching to get their turn at the table. And we have the reigning NFL Executive of the Year on our side doing the negotiating.
Come on, sweetie. Don't be a bitch. Let's talk some numbers here.
Considering what a contractual gangster Bean is, I feel like for all those out there doing some hand-wringing, this is where our GM is really going to flex his muscles a little bit. That's why I'll be reserving judgment on the job until next week when WGR 550's Nate Geary is going to join us in studio for a nice and relaxed review of everything that went on in free agency. The big deals, the reshaping of our division, how the Bills attack the second and third wave of negotiations that'll play out over the next couple days, and more. And as we all watch this play out, I just want everyone to remember, Chris, say it with me, Goosefraba. Trust the process, Goosefraba, whatever mantra you need to just relax. Remember, this is all supposed to be fun, right? Guys, this has been a blast, and we got to get the hell out of here. We'll tune into the AFC's Roundup tomorrow, or later tonight, depending on where you listen to this, and we'll see you next week with Nate Geary. For now, we got to get the hell out of here. I'm Drew Geer. That's Chris Krueger for now. And this has been the Rock Pal Report.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.